Hi, this is Keith Overholt, President and CEO of the Downtown Rescue Mission, coming to you with another podcast of Stories of Hope. And today we have one of my friends with us today. His name is Adam. And Adam is going to tell us a little bit about who he is, and we'll find out if Adam is a story of hope or not. Are you a story of hope?
I think so.
Oh, good.
I like to be.
So this is going to be a fun interview today, podcast, because Adam is a fun guy, and he's going to have a lot of laughs for us. And
oh, gosh.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah.
The pressure.
The pressure is building. So anyhow, it's good to have you here today, brother.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting
you.
Me.
Yeah. Appreciate you taking the time to talk about a little bit about who you are and really how God has changed your life. Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about your upbringing and...
So coming up, so I was born in Maine, born in Bangor, Maine. So almost Canada, actually, super north.
You ever eat a lobster?
Have I ever eaten a lobster?
Yeah, you're from Maine. I mean,
yes, I've had unlimited amount of lobster. My mom still lives up there, and my grandparents just got back from Maine actually and brought back lobster. So lobster rolls are wicked good.
Wicked awesome.
But no, my upbringing was wonderful for, you know, the most part. Mom and dad, just unconditional love. I had an older brother. It was really good. I never went without. I always had, you know, anything I wanted or definitely what I needed until about late elementary school. And I kind of moved around a lot from northern Maine to central Maine to New Hampshire and Mass, all these places. But everything was good and wonderful until about almost middle school. That's when things started to get a little rocky. My parents had rough times, and I was there for a lot of it, and I saw a lot of it, you know. And moving on from that, it was like, you know, living with mom and living with dad, and I think that's when things kind of got rough, especially I had an older brother who was like 7 years older than I was, and he was, you know, my best friend. He was wonderful, taught me everything, sports, you know, coached and stuff. And my dad was always my coach too. Until about, it was middle school. I was like in sixth grade, and we were going to go skiing. My mom's side of the family owned like a condo on the mountain or whatever. And we were going to go skiing, and we were just sitting there waiting for him forever. And he never showed up. And then I just remember like playing video games. I was playing GameCube, like NFL Street or something. And then just hearing like the phone slam into a wall and my mom just like losing it clearly. And that's when I went into the room and found out that my brother had passed away. Mm-hmm. So I think that's when, you know, everything was amazing. Everything was good. But that's when, you know, I think things started to switch up for me, you know, in middle school, not knowing who I was, being the new kid at school and all this. And then all of a sudden my best friend, you know, going on to heaven, I hope. So,
yeah. So you said your parents had trouble. Was there something that happened there that?
Yeah. I mean, they were always kind of, I think moving around a lot, you know, kind of, was an issue. It was like my dad for his job. He was like regional manager at Walmart's and stuff like that. And then he stopped doing that. Mm-hmm. And then, I think he was like working for like Edward Jones while owning like a meat and seafood store. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question on the lobster, we had plenty of it when my dad was, it was wonderful. Then like 2008 happened, the whole, you know, stock market economy, all that stuff happened. And, I think there was some, you know, marital issues that happened there as far as, more so on my dad's side.
So it caused friction. They split.
Yeah. It was rough. And, you know, I mean, you could see like, being young at the time, I didn't understand or realize it. I just, why is mom crying? Why is dad yelling?
Yeah.
Why are all these things happening? And now I can, you know, being older, I can realize and understand and stuff like that. But I think my mom, you know, was definitely, you know, forgiving and trying and stuff like that. And, you know, it was better to part ways, which made it hard because, you know, then he lived an hour away and it was live with him and go to that school district, which I wanted to because of sports. Or, you know, but I was a mama's boy. So it was like live with mom. And then after the whole brother thing, it was like, oh my gosh, like now I feel bad choosing one over the other because, you know.
So they were already split when your brother passed?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was a big thing that had a lot to do with it. I think they say the older you are, the harder it is. Yeah. I was like, you know, younger. He was like like a freshman in college.
Wow.
Yeah. That same year, I think like my brother's like fiance or like soon to be fiance, cheated on him with his best friend. Like, so my brother died, he committed suicide.
Wow.
And devastating. Yeah, it shattered me. It wrecked my life. You know, just so many questions, especially at a young age. I'm like, I didn't even know you could do that. Like, yeah, you know, like what is death? You know, like it was insane. But I mean, as far as growing up, it was always been, you know, we never went to church really, unless it was like Easter, but there was always a Bible in the house. My mom decorated the house with, you know, like scripture and stuff. And it was like, always put God first. You know, it was always knowing about God or knowing about Jesus, but not knowing him. I never had that relationship with him or anything like that, especially in Central Maine. Down here, there's a church on every street corner. Up there, it's Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So when that phone slammed on the wall that day, what happened to you?
As soon as I heard that phone slam, obviously I knew that something was bad, especially because I could hear my voice. She was like, my baby, like yelling. And I walked into the room and I just see the look on my stepdad's face, because my mom was like in the corner in the fetal position. And then looking at my stepdad, it was like, now knowing what the look on his face was like, oh crap, I'm going to have to be the one to tell him or whatever. I was like, what's up? Is it Bryant? That was my brother's name.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah. And then just put his hands over his head. And I looked at my mom. And I was like, he's dead, isn't he? Because what people don't know, or what I haven't told a lot of people about, except for like my closest friends who know, in the town that we grew up in Winthrop, Maine, and you can Google it right now, it's on Sports Illustrated, like 5 kids in a row each year committed suicide.
Wow.
Yeah. Look it up, the Sports Illustrated, the town of Winthrop, Maine. It was like one of the best athletes to ever go through Maine, who ended up playing, you know, like college Division I football. And then there was like a group of friends, and it was like funeral after funeral after funeral. And it was just, and it was all suicide.
Wow.
And yeah, but my brother was living with one of his buddies, and I guess he came home to find my brother hanging. And it was rough. It was hard to see my mom go through that. And she hasn't been the same since. But hearing that phone slam, you know, there had never been anything tragic or terrible. Even though my parents getting divorced, they always try to like keep me away from it. But, you know, as a kid, there's only so much you can.
Yeah.
But it was bad. I ran. It was a snowstorm in Maine, January 8th. I'll never forget. It was like 11:23 p.m. because we were waiting to go. And I just ran. My mom lived on the water down by like these waterfalls by this dam. And I ran there until I saw my dad pulling up in the car. You know, he came down and grabbed me and talked to me and just hugged me, you know, for forever. It was, I don't know, when you're that young, you don't know anything about life. You just feel like this is everything. So it was like, okay, life is over, you know?
So that happens, and devastating for your whole family, right?
Yeah, to say the least. Yeah, it was bad.
So you had a good childhood, and then this tragedy happens.
Mm-hmm.
So what? Tell me after that. What happens after that?
So shortly after that, my dad ends up, you know, getting rid of his meat and seafood store. And we had come down here and visited my grandfather, my dad's side of the family, very successful man, probably my hero, owned a window company in Tuscaloosa, like installed the windows in the university. And he lived in Tuscaloosa with my grandmother's sister, so my great aunt. But then my dad's brother, my uncle, got a job at Huntsville Hospital and worked at the hospital there, Crestwood or something. And then my grandparents retired, built a house next to him in the same neighborhood. If you go like down 72 East or like down by, what's the mountain out there? Chapman, something like that.
Yeah.
My dad was like, you know, I think my dad was like, we just kind of wanted to get out of this small town. You know, it's Maine. Everyone knows each other. I know I wasn't, you know, necessarily happy there. And, I don't think he was either. He wanted to be with family because, you know, after my brother died and after, you know, he divorced my mom, we come down here. He asked me if I wanted to go with him. And I was like, yeah, I want to go. But it was still hard. I think I feel like I had, you know, my mom, you know, it was like I was a mama's boy, you know, and she was obviously staying up there. She had gotten remarried to my stepdad, Doug, who's wonderful and, you know, takes care of my mom. But I think that was a really hard decision, you know, and just like I didn't want my mom to feel like she was losing another son, you know.
Yeah.
But so we came down here. And it was better, but it was still hard, you know, once again, being the new kid, you know, not knowing who I was, like, you know, losing.
Would this have been the high school years?
Yeah. I moved down here the summer going into freshman year.
Okay.
After my brother had passed. So it was like, you know, just fresh start, but also, you know, not knowing who I am, like dealing with this huge tragedy, leaving my mom, losing my brother. And I moved down here immediately and started going to this school called Valley Fellowship Christian Academy.
Sure.
And that's kind of when I started, I think, the whole, maybe like the seed had been planted kind of thing. It was like, I don't necessarily, especially now, think I line up as far as like their, you know, theology and stuff like that. But it was definitely like chapels, Bible classes, starting to like realize who this Jesus guy was kind of thing.
Sure.
But of course, shortly after that, I played hockey and lacrosse and skateboarded and stuff. And I was living in Madison and got really close with a bunch of guys who, you know, played hockey and played lacrosse and, you know, who went to Bob Jones. And they partied. So it was fun, you know, and me not knowing who I was, I never ever, you know, seeing alcohol or anything like that. It was just, it was fun. And, I think, you know, I remember, convincing my dad to let me go there so I could, you know, play sports and also like hang out with these guys because they're a lot cooler than these Christian kids, you know, this small school kind of thing. But, you know, and I'm still friends with some of them to this day, but, it was a lot going to moving to this, like this whole new big school. I think Bob Jones at the time was like the biggest school in the, you know,
big school.
It was huge going from a school where in Maine, where it was like 100 kids to this Christian school where like, it's like 40 kids, K through 12 to this, but it was fun. It was fun, but it was also a lot too, trying to be cool and fit in and not knowing who I was.
So you get into the sports and you're doing the skateboarding and stuff and you get hooked up with these guys that are kind of partiers, right?
Yeah. They knew how to have a good time.
Tell me how that goes.
So I start, you know, hanging out with these guys and girls, whoever, and going to parties and wanting to be cool and fit in and, you know, smoking weed, drinking, and that became the norm. You know, it was not only did it become the norm because it was a cool thing to do, but that's when I felt confident. That's when I felt cool, when I, you know, got drunk or, you know, got high and, you know, smoking a lot. And, you know, I felt involved. You know, it was like, okay, I don't know what to do, but, you know, it was like, come smoke with us, you know, and it was like, okay, I feel now I'm starting to be a part of a thing. And, you know, and it was fun. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'd be lying if I didn't say I didn't have fun. But I think I fell in love with, you know, the mind-altering substances, that void that, you know, I needed to be filled from my parents, my brother, whatever it may be, being the new kid, was being filled with, you know, mind-altering substance or instant gratification, things that I became addicted to not hanging out with people or, you know, having friends, but getting messed up, I think.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, my idol at the time. And I'm young too. So from, you know, 9th, 10th grade to senior in high school, it was, you know, not how are my grades looking? How is school going to be? Where am I going to go to college? It was, you know, what are we doing this weekend? What field are we going to go burn some pallets at? Is my dad going to be out of town so we can have people over here? Or that kind of thing. But
so that took you through high school, partying a little bit on weekends and kind of feeling as part of a niche group with, hey, these are the cool kids, you know, we're going to get drunk, we're going to go smoke some weed, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So what happens after high school?
After high school, my dad had told me, he begged me to stick around and stay in Huntsville or join the military, but, you know, I'm 18 years old and, you know, I know everything and all my friends are going down to Auburn. Well, so my senior year, my best friend, Nick Huntley, actually, who ended up dying from an overdose later on, his family had a house down in Auburn. And our senior year, like towards like especially football season, every weekend we were down there staying at his family's house. And that was 2011. So War Eagle, that was when Cam Newton was down there and won the national championship. And I was like I got to like be involved in Auburn. I was like, this is it, dude. Yeah. Like, what do you like? Because I didn't, you know, you hear a lot about sports rivalries. It's like Alabama, Auburn and stuff. I mean, up north, it's Red Sox, Yankees. And we have two favorite teams. It's the Red Sox and whoever's beating the Yankees.
Yeah.
Down here, it's like, you know, Auburn, Alabama. So I was like, let's see what this stuff is all about. And I just fell in love, dude. And like, you know, we were winning the national championship. It was dope. It was awesome. So we were going down there. So I didn't have the grades to get into Auburn. So I went to Southern Union, moved down there with some buddies. We had a trailer down in Auburn. Like, I think in Alabama, you have to like live in the dorms. In Auburn, you can do whatever. So my two friends, their parents went in on a trailer down there. That's the thing to do down there, to live in the trailer parks. And so I was just commuting to Southern Union, which was like 15 minutes down the road in Opelika. So, but it was super easy. So like on paper, I'm doing really good. Like at school, it's like the 13th grade.
Yeah.
But, you know, behind the scenes, you know, I'm just like, you know, partying as much as possible. And having fun, but you know, at this time still it's pretty responsible. You know, it's not, I'm not drinking on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe like going out downtown to the bars on Wednesday, but I was just having fun, man, you know, partying with the boys. So
you get past, did you graduate college?
No, no, not at Auburn. I end up, so this is where the whole, everything, like my life started to come to an end, what I thought to be. Slowly though, very slowly. I'm going to Southern Union down at Auburn and I'm coming back up to, Madison to work for my friend's dad's landscaping company. And I'm still smoking weed and I'm drinking and, you know, responsibly and stuff like that. But then it's time for me to get my wisdom teeth pulled. So I go to get my wisdom teeth pulled and, like my dad was holding onto the, you get Lortabs, like the prescription pain meds or whatever. And he would give them to me as needed or whatever. And, I didn't even know anything about pills, like really like that. And then I'm working landscaping with, you know, this like 40-year-old guy who never left town, like was a hero in high school kind of thing. But he was like, you know, would get us weed and buy us beer, 'cause we're still under 21. He was like, what, did you do the prescription pills or whatever? And I was like, my dad has them. He gave me one. He was like, you need to get a hold of those. It's like smoking weed, but it's a different high. And I was like, okay, I'll grab them or whatever. So, I grabbed them and then just, that was my true love. You know, like weed was fun. Weed was cool. Alcohol, whatever. Like, you know, I like, it's cool, but I also don't like waking up the next day hungover. But the pills, man, like the opiates, that was, you know, like, that was home, you know? So I start doing lore tabs, but I run out of the ones that I get from my, you know, wisdom teeth. And then,
you're going to go get your more wisdom teeth pulled then?
Yeah. I'm running out of wisdom teeth. So, ran out of pills, ran out of wisdom teeth.
Maybe they shouldn't have pulled wisdom from you at all. Right?
There was no wisdom, no knowledge. And you always hear like, you know, don't do drugs. Drugs are bad. I never knew why. I thought, you know,
yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you'll know when you're older. I wish I would have known when I was in jail going through withdrawals, you know.
Like, yeah.
I didn't know what it led to. But so next thing I know, I find out about OxyContin, oxycodone, Roxy's, whatever you want to call them, which your lore tabs are like 5 milligram, 7.5 milligram, 10 milligram for your wisdom teeth or, you know, if you break your finger or hurt your ankle. But I found out that for cheaper and for more milligram, for 30 milligram, 80 milligram, you know, you can get something called OxyContin. And yeah, that I found one of my weed dealers was selling them. And I wasn't even smoking weed anymore. I was like, you know, y'all can smoke weed. I'm just going to do this and yada, yada, yada. But I go back down to Auburn and one of my buddies who I went to Bob Jones with, who lived down there. Knew a guy down there who could get them. And next thing I know, like, I'm like spending all of my money. I worked at like Brewster's Ice Cream down there and I would sell some pot just like to have money to have fun. But next thing I know, I'm like going like I'm no money, like trying to like pawn things. Like, just, it takes your soul, man. It's bad.
Yeah.
But I want to continue this habit and continue to, you know, be down in Auburn with my friends. So, I asked my dealer if I can start like selling for him or somehow making money for him. And then I would do runs to like Atlanta or Columbus, Georgia from down at Auburn. It's like 30 minutes, 45 with bad traffic. So I'm like making runs for him and he would just give me like my weekly dose. But then that's all I'm doing. Grades start to fail. Dad at the time, you know, gives me his car to be down there, paying my rent, you know, probably almost living paycheck to paycheck. He's like, dude, I just can't afford it anymore. You know, like we got to do something. And I think he also started sensing that like there was something wrong there.
Yeah.
I come back home from Auburn. I go to Drake State, get an associate's degree in like drafting, civil design engineering. Drafting or civil design engineering.
Yeah.
Get hooked up with an awesome job. And while doing opiates, like I'm a functioning addict. But nobody knows, like I'm living a whole second life. Like I'm like hanging out with people who are doing the right thing or being successful or, doing all these right things. But, you know, I'm trying to do that and trying to do that. I got the job, I got the car, I got my own place, I got these things, but behind closed doors, I like, you know, in my pocket, I have pills that I need to take or I cannot function. I come back here from Auburn and it becomes to like way too much to where I have a decent job at a civil engineering company. I'm, you know, making all these designs, but I'm like in debt. Like, you know, as soon as I get my paycheck, it's gone. So I'm like, okay, how can I manage this addiction while saving money? Well, you find out about heroin, which is cheaper and goes a lot long way, you know, a lot longer. So I start doing heroin. But it starts to be a problem because I'm getting faded at my desk while doing, you know, designs. Like, hey, you okay, man? I'm like, yeah, I just tired, didn't sleep last night. So how do you stay awake when you're on heroin? You mix in Adderall, which is, you know, technically methamphetamine.
Yeah.
Which is bad. So I'm just a mess at this point, and nobody knows. Cut to
But during this, you get a good job. This is a good job, right?
Yeah, great job. Like career, like yeah, good money.
So you went to Drake State, which is a local
like college. It's like a tech school, technically, but
and you go get Bisons. You get enough to go and get a job being an engineer in a local company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just still paycheck to paycheck because you're using your money to go get the drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And paycheck to paycheck and like even like looking for ways to like take out loans or like I think I had like this one scam where I would go to like Easy Money or something like that and like show them like they would give you payday loans. So I would go to like one Easy Money or cash, whatever. And then I'd go to the next one like in that same day so they couldn't like catch up with me or whatever. I remember one time there was, I would like, this was before technology was so crazy. I would go to one bank and withdraw like $500 out of my bank account and then go to the bank across town and do it before it like, it was bad. So like then I would have to I think I had accounts at like Regions, Wells Fargo, like all these different places. It was bad. And it's all paid up now. It's good. I don't know. But yeah, thank God. Literally. Once somebody introduces me while I'm doing this engineering job and, you know, trying to balance out this whole drug addiction thing. I want to throw in there too, like this was all me. Like it wasn't like who I was surrounded with. I mean, it definitely started with that, I think, probably down in college or whatever. But like my friends are the best. If it wasn't for my friends, I would not be here today. Wow. Truly. Yeah. Like I owe them everything. And, you know, they have no idea about this. They're all successful and engineers and, you know, working at hospitals, pharmacists, on the arsenal, doing all these things. And, you know, I'm just like, wanting to be that, but so far from it, it's not even funny. It was like that whole, that blind faith thing. So snorting heroin wasn't enough. So I started shooting heroin. I heard that that was a better way of doing it. Started doing that and, mixing Adderall with it, is not good at all. You don't sleep and it's like sleep, like drug psychosis from staying up.
Yeah.
So I start like hearing voices and I can't sleep and things are bad, but in my own reality, everything's fine. I walk to a gas station close by my house, to meet my drug dealer. My phone dies and, I need to charge it there. And I know these gas station people, like know them by name. They know me by name, but it just happened to be, they hired somebody new. And I just walk in there, like I own the place, plug my phone in. She calls the cops because I'm acting weird, I guess, because I was hearing voices and just straight up tweaking. I get arrested for a public intoxication. And like which thank God I did now knowing what I know now. But at the time it was like, oh my gosh, I have a job. I have a girlfriend who doesn't know I do drugs. My family doesn't know. My friends don't know. This is real bad. Yeah. I end up getting arrested, getting bonded out of jail with like very few people finding out about it. Like I always had a hustle, you know, whenever there was like people were wondering if I was doing drugs or whatever, I could always lie my way out of it. Or I always had wiggle room. I always had a hustle. So I got my way out of that through lying and, you know, making
up stories.
About
how old were you when you went to the jail?
This was cut forward to probably 27 years old.
27.
So from, you know, 2021 flirting with drugs and doing drugs, like from 25 to 27 was like bad, like heroin and then shooting up. And,
but you had a job during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like in my head, I'm like, I'm going to lose my job.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, going to lose everything. My girlfriend who I was dating for 4 years was like very close to propose to. You know, I'm going to lose all my friends because they don't want to be somebody around somebody. And a lot of them have security clearances. They can't be around that, you know? It was my whole world was coming to an end. However, I bailed out before too many people could find out. I think a couple of my friends found out by like seeing a mugshot or something. And I was able to lie and, you know, which is just crazy. And, it just shows how much, you know, like faith and like truth that my friends had in me, which I think I still hold on to and I feel bad about, but I get out of it. But my job finds out.
How they find out about jail?
Yeah, they find out about, yeah.
How did they find out, do you know?
I think when you get arrested, I don't know if they have them anymore because I don't really go inside gas stations, but they would have like a magazine. It was like a Just Busted.
Yeah.
And like everyone who gets in Huntsville, they have their mugshot on there.
Yeah.
I think like our accountant or something like that saw me in there. Brought it there, but also I was on very thin ice because I couldn't go to work unless I was high. So I was always missing days. I was always late. I think one of the final straws was they like warned me, like, if you're late again, you're going to get fired. And then I just ended up not showing up because jail, because I got arrested. And then they found out about the mugshot and they're like, yeah, we just got to part ways. So I get out of jail, lose my job. My dad ends up finding out about it. And I'm staying with him at the time. And it's just my whole life is like falling apart. My girlfriend's suspicious. Friends are suspicious. And I mean, keep in mind being on heroin and opiates for this long, you know, you are like depressed, you're lonely, suicidal. Like the only thing that kept me from committing suicide until that point was like, I can't put my parents through that again. Like I saw what happened when my brother happened. So like, I'm not going to do that again. Until I got arrested, lost my job. Like, I was like, okay, this is it. This is how I go, you know, just like my brother did. Like, so like I wrote out like a suicide note. Like I like had it all planned out. However, like my best friend in the whole wide world, Wes Seat, was getting married in Miami. I'm wearing the bracelet right now, like the best week of my life. But I can't go to Miami with drugs and I don't want to go through withdrawals. What do? So I get on Suboxone, which is like an opiate blocker, withdrawal blocker. You can get on for people who are trying to, I don't recommend it. It's just synthetic heroin.
Yeah.
But I need to take that down there because, you know, so I get Suboxone. I start taking it the week before I go to Miami and I was like, I'm not going to ruin my best friend's wedding. So I'll just end my life when I come back. I go down there. The week before I'm on Suboxone, I go down there with like a couple. So maybe like the day we go down and like the next day I'm still taking Suboxone and then I'm done and I'm not going through withdrawals. But I had, Keith, when I tell you like the best week of my life, like it was the best week of my life. It was wonderful. I'm with my friends. I'm sober. You know, not like, you know, just having so much fun. I'm not even like thinking about, you know, drugs or anything like that. And, you know, we're drinking, we're having fun and, you know, things are fine, but you know, it's not like a vice for it. But, and then I remember one night, we were on the beach sitting around a fire and, we meet like these like older women, you know, who are like I think they were hitting on me. It was like questionable, but I just like make a scene. Like I tell them that my name is Richard and I'm an Alaskan crab fisherman, you know, but I'm in town because there's like Joe's Crab Shack next door or whatever. Yeah. I was like, I bring them their crab. And it was just like a whole thing. I just like was, it was so much fun making my friends laugh and just being a different character. I think my friend put it in the Urban Dictionary. Shout out Alex Karpowicz. It, like it's called like the Richard in the Urban Dictionary. If you look it up, that's me. But I'm hanging out there, and then everyone goes to bed except for me and my friend Chandler. We're still there. He's like, "Hey man, let's leave. We got to go to bed." I think the wedding was tomorrow. Me and him like swim out to the middle of the ocean where like these bonfires were, whatever. We're hanging out. We go back to the condo, and I cannot sleep. And like I'm crying. The wedding's tomorrow. I'm still in the back of my head like, oh yeah, like I'm supposed to end my life when I get back to like, you know, Alabama. And I just can't sleep. So I go walk out, you know, to the beach. I remember specifically I was sharing a room with Brian and Catherine Spencer. And I walk out to the beach and just am crying like uncontrollably. I'm like, God, if you are real, like help me. Like I just remember praying over and over again, like not even saying words, just like help me, help me, help me, and like just like being overcome with like what I know now was to be the Holy Spirit, but just like you're gonna be okay, you know what I mean? Like if whatever problem that you have, like if you go to somebody and they're like, I got you, I'll help you, it was like that, but it was like it was over me. It was just wonderful. It was like, I guess, you know, my dad always says we're gonna have a come to Jesus meeting. Like I had a come to Jesus meeting with God. Like it was wonderful. I end up you know, going to the wedding and, you know, even like my friend's aunt and uncle, like who were doing the wedding. I remember they were like, it's been amazing meeting everybody here, including Adam. And I just felt so loved, dude. Yeah. It was like, okay, I'm awesome sober. Like, let's try to maybe this like whole second, you know, let me try to like not kill myself and live life, like be a man and do it on my own still. I'm like, I can do this on my own. But the day of the wedding is my court date for getting arrested at the gas station. So I'm coming back to warrants, you know, it was bad.